Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering.
Hello there. This week, I'm at the lovely Aberystwyth Comedy Festival talking to the brilliantly funny and excellently lovely comedian, Mark Watson. First, though, it's Hoovering Live this weekend in Manchester. That's Sunday the 13th of October. It's on 2 till 4 in the afternoon. It's going to be so good. I've got the amazingly funny, and I couldn't love her more, comedian Amy Gledhill coming. She's so good. She's part of Delightful Sausage, the double act that got nominated for the Dave Comedy Award, the big main one in Edinburgh for Best Show this year. And also we've got ex-Chumbawamba star and now highly acclaimed screenwriter and playwright Alice Nutter, and maybe one more superstar to be confirmed soon. We're still waiting to hear. I would love to see you at that. If you'd like to come to live shows and like discount tickets to those, why don't you become my patron? You can go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod and see all the stuff like extra content, discount tickets, all sorts of stuff that I swap in exchange for your pennies if you have any spare ones. Right, let's get into this podcast. I met to eat some really lovely chips from a very futuristic sounding but truly delicious place called Chip Box 4. I met Mark Watson right next to the beach, so do excuse or even go so far as to enjoy the sound of the waves crashing alongside our conversation. So hopefully you can hear us. Well, I'm sat with Mark Watson on the beach, not quite on the beach, on a bench next to the sea that you can hear in Aberystwyth, because there's a comedy festival here. Thanks for doing this, Mark. How are you?
Oh, it's a pleasure. I mean, so far all I've done is eaten chips, really, and a bit of a pie. I'm good, yeah. It's quite dramatic here, isn't it? Quite big waves. It's very pretty here.
Very beautiful, very moody. Just like any sort of bit of British seaside, really. But also, so we've got fish and chips, or you've got a pie and chips from, I've just now realised, a fish and chip show I can't pronounce.
Yeah.
It's BLWCH. Sglodion fish and chips.
It's a big ask, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the best way to say it is if you're in Aberystwyth, look for a pink place and it's that.
Yeah, yeah. We're at the pink fish and chip shop opposite the pier, which we've been recommended is the best chips here.
Yeah, the chips are lovely.
The chips are so lovely.
I love a pie, so I will normally have a pie in a chippy, but.
But do you like fish?
Yeah, I actually do. Yeah, and I bet that's nice as well, but I just couldn't resist. Something about a little pie in a wrapper like this, it really does it for me.
It's very comforting, isn't it?
But you've got to sort of get into it with your fork. It's not as transportable as
It's hard to eat, isn't it?
Yeah, but you've got to.
Just got to get involved. We've got little wooden forks.
We bought a spare each. I think that's, I feel guilty sometimes, but it's wood, isn't it? So it's fine. That's not even shit for the planet.
No, I think that's all right. It's probably worse for the planet that we're eating fish. Fish is even all right, isn't it? Unless you overfish certain ones.
Yeah, I probably am eating a fish that's been overfished.
I mean,
probably.
Pie is definitely not. I mean, red
that's
meat.
That's overfished.
I'm trying to. Yeah,
beef's overfished.
That hasn't. Oh, they fish the hell out of beef. You hardly see it in the sea these days. I'm trying to cut down on red meat because, for loads of reasons, really, but largely my health and the health of the planet.
Mm.
But again, a beef and onion pie is just really. Yeah. It really is a satisfying experience.
Also, I think cutting down is great. It doesn't mean you have to never have things.
No.
There's a pigeon with us.
The pigeon's very interesting. Must just be into the podcast.
It's got a funny walk. You should be lucky that you live by the seaside, pigeon. Still got both your feet, but that is a hobbly walk. It's really joining in. It's going to peck the wires of the recorder.
I wouldn't be too surprised. He's after either a chip or a wire. Or he just wants to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, actually, that's true. Do you know what? Could just be a lovely fan.
You shouldn't dismiss your audience, yeah.
A lovely fan. So somewhere near the top of this podcast, usually I ask if you've eaten anything particularly memorably good or bad in the last few weeks. Anything brilliant or shit?
Well, let me think. As I say, I'm on this campaign to gradually cut down red meat and stuff. So I've been eating things that I wouldn't normally, like...
Oh.
Like... trying to get away with aubergine instead of meat, this sort of business.
Yeah.
I'm signed up to one of these things. My girlfriend and I are signed up to one of these things where they send you the ingredients and tell you.
Oh, like Gusto or one of those.
Yes, it's called Mindful Chef.
Oh,
but
nice.
It allows people like me that are shit at cooking to feel as if you are cooking, even though really you just have to chuck loads of ingredients in the thing.
It's not, you still have to chop it up though and follow the recipe. They just send you the exact ingredients.
So you get the kudos of having prepared it, but you don't have to do stuff like measuring them out or, for that matter, finding the things in a supermarket.
That's so true.
We went to, the most memorable thing I've eaten in the past weeks is we went to Croatia.
Oh, wow.
Which is Dubrovnik, really nice, really beautiful.
Wow.
Stunning sort of old walled city with all, and there's a fancy restaurant we went to on the last night with a tasting menu. I'm a real sucker for that sort of thing. Talking you through all of the courses, the story of it, all this absolute nonsense, but lovely nonsense.
Yeah.
I love the pantomime of
the theatre of it. It's so fun, isn't it?
Really fun.
And was it all really yummy? Was there anything a bit like? I always find there's one course. Not that I've been on loads of those. There'll always be one course. I think you pushed it here.
It was mostly. I chose the option which was the sort of greatest hits tasting menu, basically.
Nice.
So I probably missed out on the ones the chef had done where he was like, oh, that was shit. That's true. It was one of these like super minimalist setups where the menu literally just said, like, course one, carrot, course two, duck, course three, that's it. And you think, I mean, I hope there is a bit more to it than that.
I imagine there was, though, was there?
Yeah, although every time I've ever done one of these, which isn't many times, but every time I've done a tasting menu, there's the first couple of courses. You do think this can't be it. By the end of it, you've had it. You can't keep going. It's amazing
so
how
much food.
They pack so much density of flavour, and I do love it. I don't know much about it. I'm not much of a gourmet, but I love the experience of it. A proper 6 or 7 course. I nearly always choose it if there's an option to have a tasting menu. Except as you say, often you will be landed like. Course number 4 will come along and you think, well, this wouldn't have made, if this was on the menu to pay for, you wouldn't get away with this.
I remember going somewhere, I can't remember the name of it, and at the time it was quite new and I think it's still around. I'll look it up and put it in the podcast notes, but it was all incredible apart from like all the waiting stuff, like all in black, and they brought you the bread at the beginning in a brown paper bag, which felt very masturbatory. And
normally if something comes in an unmarked bag like that, in bread.
Yeah. You're like, oh, they're giving us it's a severed hand.
Is this for before or during the meal or
but also there was a course called like aloe and alioli or something, and it was just like 18 different smears or foams or dollops, all based around onion and garlic as flavours. And yeah, I mean, onion and garlic are fine, but it was like, fuck me, by the end of all of the splats and scrapes, yeah. It's like, come on, mate, like, this is, I get it, like, it feels like a showing off of technique over yeah. and above anything that's actually going to cause an eater pleasure.
We once went to the Fat Duck.
Oh, wow, was that good?
Which was, because it's my friend Corey,
yeah.
who's sort of a comedy, a person of many parts, but it was yeah. her dream to go there because
oh, wow.
she is a real foodie and yeah. Fan of restaurants and knows about like famous chefs and all this sort of business.
Brilliant.
So about 3 years ago, we managed to get a slot and took her.
Oh,
and
wow.
That really is like, you're there for absolutely ages.
Yeah.
It's, and it's Woo. It's not just like, talking about it as theatre is accurate in that case. They literally, your waiter is called a storyteller or something like that.
Oh my God.
And there's a theme to it. And a
wow.
narrative, which unfolds, which is, I mean, it's not much of a narrative, but it was something like, I think it was based around a family holiday.
Okay.
So it's like, you get up, you're going to have a big breakfast before you leave, and then they serve this, came out of a cereal box, and it was a cereal, but the cereal taste, when you poured the milk on it, it tasted of a full English breakfast, all this sort
oh
of wizardry.
Oh my God.
There was a sort of, some sort of course where he brought out a vat of liquid nitrogen and poured all, you know, stuff where you think, I hope this works because it looks like it might blow up otherwise. But yeah, even in the middle of that, as you're starting to tire a bit, there's one course that was, I remember there was about five courses in, there was a course which was a three-course meal, and that was the actual meal, but by now you'd already been battered with food
God.
And stuff. And then towards the end of it, there was some sort of dessert which again was poured into a bowl, and it was like there was real kind of artistry to it, but when you had it, it was yeah. basically just milk. It was just like a bowl of milk.
Oh,
and by
God.
That point, you already felt as if you wouldn't ever be able to eat again in your life. So, and yeah, even with that, even in that rarefied atmosphere, you did sort of think, oh, Heston's taking the piss a bit here. But it was that same thing of, and it's sort of amazing as an experience and slightly horrifying at the same time, because you're aware that you're participating in something which is the ultimate in being spoiled, like the
yeah.
needless extravagance of it. We stayed at my friend Cole's aunt's house afterwards because she lived nearby and we couldn't really move very far.
Just rolled there.
And she'd just bought this, she's the sort of aunt or the sort of older relative you get who is enormously suspicious of any meal or anything that costs more than like £2.
Understandably.
So she just got like a cauliflower from Lidl or something. She was like, she listened to the description of things we'd been eating, and I said, well, I got this for 75p tonight, and I could make you a meal out of this. I'm like, yeah, I know, that's right, we are dicks.
I know,
yeah,
we
know
dicks.
We're awful.
I had a friend that who'd wanted to go to the Fat Duck for her whole life and saved up and waited and got on the list and stuff and then eventually went, and they did have an amazing time, much like you were saying, like it's a whole day out really.
Mm.
But they made the very dick mistake of saying yes to the wine tasting menu to go with the tasting menu. No, they didn't. They said, no, we won't, you know, we just can't afford that. This is like a massive treat or whatever. They said yes to, so they just had a glass of wine each, and then they said yes to a dessert wine. And the dessert wines were something like £100, another £100.
Yeah, that's the trouble.
Whoa, that is, I mean, you just...
Anything that's not included already in the price, you've got to keep a real eye on that.
Yeah.
Because you just choose a wine at random from the menu, it might be £4.5 and you wouldn't know.
I had, and on the like, knowing that you're living a, you know, checking your fucking privilege to the extent that it can ruin the thing, or at least ruin the memory of it immediately when the aunt gets the very impressive cauliflower out. But my friend, I was in a play in July, and my friend came to watch, and then went, I'll take you for dinner afterwards on Upper Street. And it wasn't, she's very successful, and it wasn't somewhere I'd have picked for like dinner to go at 9:30, you know.
Mm.
But it was
it's
like,
a funny
it's
feeling when you realise that someone's idea of a casual bite afterwards is not the same as your.
Fuck me. Actually, but it was on her, and it was very sweet of her. But in this amazing seafood place on Upper Street. But because it's Upper Street, you've got this fucking tray of oysters, and you're having the time of your life, but. It's literally under 5 minutes between intervals of someone without anywhere to live coming past and asking just for change, and you're like, I just feel disgusted.
Yeah.
I'm like waving my privilege in your...
It's weird, isn't it? Anytime you have fancy meal, it does obviously come into your mind that if you've got any sort of conscience about you, that it wasn't necessary to spend that much
yeah.
on food. So I suppose you just rationalise it by thinking, yeah, but all of us are spending money constantly, which other people
exactly.
wouldn't spend because they don't have it. So at some point you have to allow yourself to enjoy
life.
Something.
Yeah,
in life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also,
it
I
doesn't
think
mean
it
you
is,
can't be supportive of people.
All, exactly. Yeah, it is all really. It's just all about context, isn't it, and relevance. The
yeah.
sun's come out and really shining in our eyes, and it's really lovely, but also it means that more people are walking past and staring at
yeah.
us. Yeah. I like it.
I don't mind it.
I like it. We wouldn't be comedians if we didn't want to be stared at a bit.
I think both of us are at the level where a bit of attention is nice,
yeah,
because we don't, we're not overloaded
nice.
With it.
Oh, if anything, still not enough, really.
Yeah.
From
why has no one
strangers?
Said, oh, wow, are you recording a cult podcast?
Yeah. Oh, is it the Hoovering podcast? No, never heard of it. They've never heard of it. Talk to me about eating as a comedian. Do you? I think there's two ways it can go. It's either like, or maybe a bit of both. But people seem to either say like, yeah, a lot of pasties, or actually no, lots of daytimes at home doing loads of cooking.
Well, I'm towards the end of a immensely long tour.
Long tour, yeah.
And it does have quite a big impact on your. Diet, not
yeah.
least because, as everyone knows, you're constantly on stage at exactly what you would normally think of
yeah,
as dinner time.
Yeah, so true.
But I've been touring for long enough that I've evolved sort of systems, and I've got right. a girlfriend, stroke producer, and tour manager. The three of us as a unit are all
yeah.
quite committed to eating really nice food because,
great.
Like with any other aspect of touring. It can either drag you down, or if you make it into a challenge, like what are the best places we can find to it? Not even in terms of
yeah.
expense or quality, just what will make it not what will be something you look forward
well, no,
to.
Yeah, what do we really want? Yeah,
rather
absolutely.
Than desperately
sometimes
coming out
will
of a
be
gig.
Fish and chips, and sometimes it will be actually, it's been 2 months, it's going really well. Shall we go somewhere with a taster menu?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so we have had some lovely meals on this, or even not even lovely in terms of high end, but just
yeah, yeah,
really
yeah.
satisfying. Like,
great.
For example, you can. I mean, I love curry. I love Indian food.
Me too.
But if you're on tour and you just, like, come out of the theatre at 10 o'clock and throw yourself at the mercy of a curry house, then
yeah.
24 of those in a row and you do start to feel. Whereas if you do a bit of research and...
Yeah.
I'm now quite good at ringing places and saying, like, it says 10 o'clock on your website. If we're in there at 1 minute to 10, can we order this sort
yeah,
of thing?
Yeah,
because that
yeah.
is what... That's where touring can get you down.
Yeah.
You rely on Google...
Mm-hmm.
And the place appears to be open. Every comedian's had this experience.
Yeah.
And you get there and they're... Either they're shut and the website was a lie, or they're
oh.
technically open, but they're furious with you for coming
oh,
in.
Oh, God, and then like, you're so rushed, which is...
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than trying to throw a curry in at a pace that's uncomfortable.
It's not the sort of food you want
no.
to be done and dusted
also,
within 20
do you know
years.
What? I think a curry might be the saddest thing I've ever eaten on my own in a hotel room.
Yeah.
It's not eat on your own in a hotel food, is it?
No, you can't...
You have to
you
sit
can't
at
really,
table, really, for one of them.
It's almost the only food that... You'd feel really sad if you,
yeah.
for how delicious it is, you don't want to be taking it out of the rest. You don't want them
like,
to be packaging
it
up.
You don't want
it
fresh out
you.
Of the tin foil. There's pretty
no.
much everything else I'll happily, even Chinese takeaway, everything.
Yeah.
Out of the packaging.
But something about
and
a curry is meant to be an experience, even if
yeah.
it's a slightly sort of crappy experience. You want to eat in the restaurant with it, don't you?
It's so true.
Partly because the ritual of the bringing out the poppadoms, the
yeah.
dipping the naan bread in the
yeah.
someone else's sauce, all this business to try it. If you're on your own, unless you put Indian music on your... Unless you put a sitar on your
iPhone or
something...
Oh, God, that's so true, actually.
Something.
You could. Right. You could order Siri to play you some sitar
I reckon that'd
music.
Be still sadder if
and
you tried to construct the experience of an Indian restaurant in a hotel room.
And you could
room.
Open your computer at the same time and ask that to, if it had a way of playing you some background chatter.
Yeah, and
I'm making it more depressing, aren't I?
You could download one of the massive menus that they have in Indian restaurants and pretend to be ordering it. Ask the room service people
Ooh.
If they would bring it up to you.
It hasn't got it on here, but do you do Sakaloo? Yeah, just talk to yourself. And then do the waiter's voice back at you, but don't do a racist impression.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's fraught with trouble, isn't
it's
it?
It's fraught with trouble. Just go to the restaurant.
You're much better off in a real restaurant.
Have you always been fine eating in restaurants on your own, or did comedy do that to you?
Oh,
it
actually,
did it for me.
It's hard to remember because I've been doing comedy so long,
yeah.
but I think I've always quite liked eating on my own, I think.
Mm.
I've always... When I was a student, I used to... go to the cinema on my own sometimes
yeah.
if there was a dead thing, or I'd go to a gig on my own, a music gig.
Yeah.
Cause just because I was a big, if I was a big fan of something, or if the film was at a good time, that's what basically I would never let not having someone to go with hold me back. And
that's great.
For years, people like especially in the first half of your 20s, people will always go, who are you going with? Well, yeah, and they're amazed if you're doing it on your own. But
that's so true, isn't it?
Which meant that temperamentally I was quite well suited to being a comedian, maybe, because when I started going, when I was first getting booked, and I'd have, like, be going to Hull for a night on my own and stuff like that that I never imagined. If there was an opportunity to hang out with the other comedians, I would, but I never never daunted by the idea of... I think I've always quite liked my own company, which is really handy if you're a... You still get lonely sometimes, but certainly if I'm in a restaurant on my own, which does sometimes happen on tour, I generally find it quite relaxing. You often look at other people... You look at, like, people that have clearly been together for 40 years, but there's no real conversation there.
You're watching a couple not talk to each other.
And you think, well... definitely rather be on my own than be those guys.
I went yesterday, I was in Anglesey, and I went to this amazing place called Dylan's, which I think there's three of all over different bits of Wales, but the one I went to was in Menai Bridge, and they do, like, great mussels that they've got from the sea right there, the Irish Sea right there, and or the Menai Strait, and I took the piss because it wasn't heaving, and sat with this amazing view for the whole afternoon and worked.
Oh, lovely,
But I had two couples sit right next to me and have full meals and leave while I, like, drank coffee and took ages over everything.
But that's the other thing. As a comedian, you do know how to draw out a meal for as long as possible.
Really do.
So often
you
have no option but to stay somewhere and work for 4 hours.
It's
so then
true. I phone up in advance of that, though, because I don't want to piss them off. I was like, I'm going to be a prick and ask if you've got Wi-Fi. And they were like, yep. And I was like, and I don't know how busy you are, but if I come and have lunch, do you mind if I sit there with a coffee then for a bit and do some work? And they were like, no, lovely. So
most people
are
absolutely fine with it if you make a point of asking. You're right. It's just if you appear to be taking the piss. Yeah. The longest meal I think I've ever eked out was years ago. I think it was just after I left uni, and I was in Montreal. Me and my brother and my mate went to Montreal for New Year. I was in Canada for a few months, so they came over and we went there just for the hell of it, for New Year's Eve.
Nice.
And it was really fun, but we had no money, and it was extraordinarily cold, because that time of year Montreal is. So we wanted to be, like, in amongst it for the actual chimes and all the celebrations, but it was about 6 o'clock, and we were like, we can't stand around this for 5 hours, we'll die. So we found a restaurant, and then basically just made dinner go from 6 p.m. to about almost 5 to midnight, and we didn't really... We had very low budget for it, so we were just having to work out what was the most time we could leave between ordering things, and also how we
what element of the meal would be the least disgusting freezing cold,
all of that stuff. I reckon I could still eat this in an hour. I think it seems like even before I was a comedian, I've always had certain skills or traits which make me suitable for it, I'm happily, if I've got work still, I'll happily sit in a restaurant all afternoon if they don't mind. As you say, though, the only thing is there are places where if you get a laptop out and just order a series of coffees, they will look at you like,
furious.
I mean, is this it?
Even if you've had, like, a starter.
Even if you've already
mains.
Eaten as much as
I always make
can,
sure
I
order a starter, one, because starters are my favourite thing, but also, like, then you're like, well,
you've got something on the board then.
I'm allowed the coffee as well as starter.
You've got something
coffee.
Under your belt. You can legitimately say,
So true. I've gone kind of full circle, I think, a bit. Or maybe I can just feel it going back. I used to be really wary, especially of pubs on my own. And comedy's just fixed that, because I like working in pubs.
Yeah, you start to value...
Not every pub, not one full of, like, people, but actually...
No, but a nice, quiet... A pub that other people would regard as having no atmosphere is normally perfect for a comedian.
Yeah.
You just find a corner, absolutely, in the middle of the afternoon sometimes. Especially if it's... You come into the winter months and it's... You arrive in a town and it's cheerless.
Yeah.
And it's occasionally will happen upon a pub with a fireplace or something... No one's there because it's 3 p.m. That's absolutely perfect. Yeah, I'm always interested by people who are obviously understand. Sometimes you'd rather have a mate there, but when people have this dread of being anywhere on their own, like a restaurant or a pub or anything, often for legitimate reasons.
Yeah.
But I do feel sorry for them because
you're really limited.
Without wanting to sound antisocial, you really are.
Yeah.
It's a great pleasure to just be able to go off somewhere on your own and just sit up there for a bit. And if you're a comedian. Either you already are like that, or as you say, you'll become like that. Because
I was quite gregarious and quite scared of being on my own, and I learnt it. And now it's just started to come, not full circle again, as in, like, I'm very happy to eat on my own and I love going to the cinema on my own. That feels like the most decadent, lovely treat.
It is.
Especially if you've got kids.
The word,
The joy
That's
of
the
going
thing.
Sit somewhere, not even for work, for fun, for upwards of 2 hours.
Once you've got kids, you have a very different idea of whether company is automatically a good idea.
Yeah, true. But now, weirdly, I'm like, I just noticed the difference. I've been away all this week and had two nights in kind of weird, guest houses and B&Bs, and then I had one night with a friend who's a really new friend. I don't know her that well, but she invited me, and I was like, oh, this is joyful to talk to someone all evening and, yeah, and eat in someone's kitchen and play with someone's dog and come actually. And I was like, oh, I do feel a little bit of my the tenderness of soul, actually, of any.
That is the flip side. If you live as a comedian for long enough, then, and especially coming out of a longish spell on the road, then you do. Sometimes you are like someone in a movie that's come back from war and they've forgotten what it's like to sit at a table and have a cup of tea. Yeah. Also, you need both, I think. Yeah. I think we're lucky to have a very freeing job, but occasionally it can make you, you can trace somewhere down the country feeling quite cut adrift from everyone.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yum in my tum.
Talking of which, I want to talk about that Celebrity Island with Bear Grylls that you did.
Oh, it didn't get much more cut adrift than that.
No, exactly. But also, didn't you nearly die from not having enough to eat on that?
Well, we were quite
what the fuck was
starved.
It like? But also,
it's really
awful.
Do you
think they'd have let anyone die?
Well, it's interesting. They
seem to let people get horribly close.
I noticed they've stopped doing it as a celebrity show.
Oh.
They've gone back to doing it with members of the public.
Right.
Or at least for this year they have.
Okay.
And they've changed the format, so it's now called, I haven't really watched much of it. I watched about 50 minutes of it. It's now called Treasure Island with Bear Grylls.
I thought you were going to say it's called Normal People Island with Bear Grylls.
Yeah.
Civilian
it's
Island.
Civilian Island. Yeah, it's it's like I think that, so now basically it's the same concept, which is can these essentially strangers survive, establish a community on an island, but there are cash prizes that they compete for now, which would make it even worse, because the only way we survived was because of the sense of community that you established with these other people.
So instead the incentive's cash. I'm not sure if that's not morally much worse.
Yeah, there's some sort of stick, like you find money dotted about the island and you can either share it amongst everyone or hoard it for yourself, so it becomes kind of game playing and stuff.
Oh, fucking hell, Hunger Games.
Essentially,
literally.
Almost literally the Hunger Games. I wouldn't have lasted half an hour if I hadn't felt we were all
I fucking hope they're careful about how much the people that are going on it need the money,
well,
then.
Well, it's interesting. A lot of things are questionable about it. They've done a lot of health and safety, obviously their insurance stuff.
Yeah.
You have a lot of... But I was going to say you have a lot of first aid training, but you really don't, actually.
Really?
We were there for 2 days before the actual process
began.
2 days?
Is that all the survival training
they
get?
They fly you there on a Friday, and then by the Tuesday, you're on the fucking island.
Oh, my God.
And it's not even 2 full days. 2 9-to-5 days of training, which means they have to go so fast that it's like a bloke saying, so to make a trap so you can catch food, basically you... And I'm not someone that can... Yeah. Watch a thing and
no,
then immediately
I need to be shown things
out.
About 8 times. I think I'd be absolutely diabolical.
So a couple of people were like, alright, so you just sling that over there, pull that, and you're like, I was like, hang on, wait. But then they're on to, so this is what happens if a crocodile attacks you.
Oh my God.
So the first aid training was basically, this is a defibrillator, press this button, push that, and that'll save you. Like, has everyone got that? And you again, you feel like being back at school and you don't want to be the one that puts your hand up and says, I didn't get that.
Fuck.
So everything was like that. So, and we went on with, and then it pissed it down and there's thunderstorms and all the rest of it. So any shelter that we were able to build was all blown away. But yeah, the main thing is you don't eat for... There just isn't any...
There's nothing to eat.
There's just coconuts which you can like suck the juice out of and crack them up, shavings off them. And then we had to... My job was... One of my jobs in the camp was to peel little limpets and things off rocks and then we would boil them. But you really are...
But that's just the tiniest amount of... Physically, the tiniest amount of
it's
food.
It's like a couple of hundred calories a day, yeah. And you're,
shit,
you're really
oh
like...
Oh, my God.
I lost 3 stone.
Oh, my God.
Which a lot of people felt was enviable, but it's not the way you want to do it, I don't think.
No.
And also,
fuck
I wasn't
enviable.
Very heavy to start with. I didn't want to lose
food. Yeah,
it's interesting. There's a kind of... The show only makes sense if it's... as close to the edge as possible, because it is meant to be about survival. So it's not even like I'm a Celebrity and stuff, where by all accounts they do well. For a start, they can win meals and stuff via these challenges, but I hear that even if they don't win them, they get something. They get some rice or something. And so a lot of people assume that all shows are like that, but the whole thing with the island is they want you to suffer as much as you
like
can.
It feels like the realest thing I've ever witnessed.
They don't even see
it's hard to watch in a way that's like the jungle just isn't.
It's meant to be really unpleasant. It's meant to be like they don't like to see it as a so-called reality show. They see it as a survival show. It is an extension
of
Bear Grylls.
You watch people go mad because they're starving.
Yeah,
they're starving.
And it's funny, that's what makes it good TV. But there were times when, like, there's no... One of the contestants is a doctor. One of the islanders is a doctor, which is part of their insurance, I think. So our one was a doctor from things like This Morning and like a minor celeb doctor who was lovely, a woman called Sarah, and all of us I mean, she was a really nice person anyway, but even if she hadn't been, there was a real incentive to befriend her. Yeah. I was relieved that I did get on with her.
I saved you a bit of coconut, Sarah. Yeah.
Is there anything I can get you, just in terms of you potentially having to save my life?
Well, can I offer you a limpet?
So she had this rudimentary first aid kit, and then if there was an emergency, you had to call. We had a radio to call but you have no contact with them apart from emergencies. And even then, they're a boat ride away, and it would take about 25 minutes. And even then, that would be if the... I remember the bloke saying, that's if the sea is favourable, it's not always. So basically, if someone had a proper, an actual
or
heart attack or something.
Or something,
there'd be a limit to what Sarah could have done, and we would have been... I sometimes think, looking back on it, that...
Do the people filming you have nothing to eat?
No, there's five of them, the camera crew, and they're never seen on... or rarely seen on camera, but they live with... They're in the same situation. They don't... They suffer even more because they're doing all that, but they're also carrying these heavy... So they were in a terrible state physically. Because they basically hire people who are specialists in extreme filming. But even they were like... They were all saying, I filmed in Antarctica, I've been in... But nothing's as bad as this because I've never not been fed at the time before. And it's interesting, as everyone knows, the lack of food and the lack of sleep...
You get mad.
Sends you literally crazy. All of your other problems are thrown out of proportion because you just can't think straight. And you do start to psychologically, you really... But the upshot of... what I was going to say was... I hope this prophecy never comes true, but I sometimes think that these formats of these shows will be pushed further and further until there is a tragedy of some kind.
Well, there's already the Love Island suicides that everyone sort of knows about, but everyone goes, well, it seems...
I reckon in 20 years there might be a thing. It seems to have
been an enormous... what appears to be an overhaul of aftercare for people on reality.
Yeah, which is good, I think.
Yeah, it's absolutely good, but it's the first step to... But in reaction to something that's so huge, exactly like you say, things are getting so much more extreme.
They are. I think they sort of have to, because the idea of... celebrities do a thing is worn quite thin now, so they have to be more extreme things. So that's, you get like that Winter Olympics one where people have to ski jump
and they'll break all the legs.
that is a symptom of a society that's so bored that it has to make
it's
people do stuff that's
celebrities
definitely
off a precipice. Yeah. But we're all up for it, so
if you saw a trailer where Christopher Biggins had to fly a plane or something, you'd be like, all right then.
where the dog was a pilot, be like, Biggins going down.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Just would, but also it's telly, so you don't have that connection of reality.
I remember most of us thinking at some point, I had no illusions about how rough it would be because I'd spoken to Josie Long, who did the previous series, but also because I'm not an adventurous person, particularly have no real survival skills. So unlike some of the people, I didn't go in thinking, this is an adventure or this will be a blast. I just went in thinking, this is a challenge you've accepted and go for it. So I thought it was going to be horrible. But nonetheless, there is this moment where about five nights in, we were flooded out. We were sleeping in this ditch. Lightning was cracking overhead. I've got a phobia of lightning, a lifelong phobia. So I was absolutely terrified. This bloke from Ryan from Coronation Street, it was a lovely bloke, it was one of the celebrities, was on the radio going, and we felt like dicks because we've only been there for 5 days, but we were like, you're going to have to help us here because we haven't got anything to eat, we don't have a shelter, we haven't found any water yet apart from just drinking the rainwater off leaves, and also we think we're going to die in this. So there's a clip of him going, we're fucking dying here, and but the producers understandably were like, I remember them using some phrase like hunker down, or we were just like, we should just hunker down till the morning, and we had no idea how many hours off the morning was. But I remember with murderous eyes, he said, they've just said we have to hunker down. All of us were like, and it dawned on everyone, like, well, this isn't just telly, this actually is a real life.
It's a type of torture they're doing,
but something that I took from it long term, there are a lot of things that I've gained from it long term in terms of just my self esteem and my ability to dig deep and think, okay, you got this, because I got a lot of self-respect out of it, because
amazing.
But also I really do enjoy food more, even like
I was going to say, I want to know whether it's going to 2.5 years on, but I think anyone who's ever gone to, and I spoke to Jack Monroe about, like, you know, anyone who's ever had a situation in their life,
because she's like starved basically,
if you genuinely couldn't get food when you were starving hungry, that's such a visceral type of trauma.
It really is.
There's
no
way it can't change your relationship to fullness and hunger.
No, it's true. Even though I was not like a victim of poverty or anything,
situation, you're starving and there's no
food in your body. It's the same situation, which is I am desperate for food and I can't, and ever since the first meal back, for the first day or so, you have to just eat like fruit and drink water, and they
just
monitor,
puke it up.
Otherwise, you will absolutely, you'll just, shit your body out, will just, you'll shit it out instantly. Yeah.
Oh, God.
So one of the previous contestants said to us, as soon as I got out, I had like a steak and a load of lies. I just could not resist it. And she used some phrase like, it was like someone had turned the taps on at both ends.
Oh, so
I was like,
right, well, no!
Without wanting to ask any more questions, I don't think I want that to happen to me.
No.
Yet.
Oh, my God.
So for about a couple of the people on the island, despite these warnings, just demented with hunger. But I was like, all right, I'll play by the rules. I ate like nothing but mango and whatever it was that we were. Then on day two, you were allowed to have something.
What did that first thing taste like? Was it mango?
The very first thing was like, I think it was just fruit, some mango and some pineapple and stuff like that.
God,
and then
quite big flavours. If your mouth just had coconut.
It's because it's an island off Panama, and there's a limit to what they could actually get you. It was quite. But then we were allowed. I think on the first night, I was allowed chicken, just very plain rice, the plainest of food, but it was like, it felt like, this is amazing. And then eventually, about 24 hours after you leave, in a hotel, you're by now in a nice hotel, and I ordered spaghetti bolognese on room service, and it was just the most functional of bolognese, but I was eating every mouthful like, I need to go down and talk to the chef, and this is the absolute business. And it was like a, what you'd think of as a normal sized portion of it, but I was just like, there's so much of it. Even after this mouthful, there'll be another mouthful. And I had a glass of red wine with it, which was like, in fact, the waiter brought it, bolognese and glass of wine. I picked it up and my hands were shaking so much I dropped the wine immediately.
Oh no!
It was all over I was outside on this balcony, the wine was swilling all over the guy didn't even flinch, presumably because they'd had other people from the island stay there. So he's just like, no worries, I'll come back.
Get another one of those.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And then the next day I had like, I've obviously never been pregnant, but I had what I can only imagine are the sort of stereotypical cravings, that like irrational cravings that some people report when they're pregnant. Yeah. And I've never had that much of a sweet tooth, but I think because your sugar deprivation hits you in a different way.
Yeah.
I was like, the whole time I've been on the island, I've been fantasizing about jelly babies. I want jelly babies, I want mashed potato, very specific food. Yeah. I've always loved mash, but now I was like, so the day after that bolognese, you had to stay there one more day so you have medical checks and stuff. And there was a supermarket. They said, don't leave the hotel. You're still not very well. You must just rest up. But I'm physically quite active person anyway. Yeah. So I'm not lying in bed all day. So I went out, found this supermarket. Obviously, they didn't have jelly babies because we were in Panama and it's not a real thing. But there were Oreos. And I just bought an unbelievable number of Oreos and just like chain ate these. Yeah. And again, I was like, why have I never understood what an Oreo biscuit? Like, this is unbelievable. And ever since then, I've still, sometimes I go home and my mum will make like bangers and mash or those sort of comfort foods. And the number of times in my life I've been like, oh, mum's made sausage and mash again. That's nice. That's my favourite. But I wouldn't really feel it all the time.
Whereas now I'm like, this is
amazing.
Have an emotional response.
I've really learned to like emotionally savour every mouthful of every time I eat food or drink wine these days. Or I am like, basically what they call mindfulness, I suppose.
I
made a specific
gift.
Vow to do it. When I left the island, I was like, all right, something you can learn from this is there are so many things that make you enjoy life which you already have them, you just don't understand it. You don't stop and yeah, like you say, it hasn't really worn off that, because I can still summon that feeling of we haven't eaten and we don't know when we're going to eat, and there's 12 more days of this and I'm miserable. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a really...
That's extraordinary. What a huge gift.
It is a gift. It's one of the... I did the island because I had this idea that... I was just in the throes of a divorce.
Right.
I'd had a tough 2 or 3 years on all sorts of levels. And so I had this feeling that I had something to gain from it psychologically, that I would step back from my life and reset a bit. And it was what happened. Whereas a lot of people, like, they looked good on the telly and it was a career boost. But in terms of the actual experience, they didn't gain as much from it, because they were just like, well, that was horrible. Now it's over, thankfully. But yeah, it is true. Basically, all of us know that eating well and stuff like that is such a massive... daily gift, but unless it's brutally taken away from you, you'll never fully
unless it's ripped from you.
Because if you're a normal person, you can't every meal go, wow, this is incredible.
You can try,
but you can try,
and that's what I do try and do.
Yeah,
exactly. And if you're busy, I think for the majority of people, it's either money or time or both.
Yeah.
But the time is, I mean, I'm so lucky. But to carve time to really taste stuff is fucking hard, actually. But also. Yeah. That's also...
Well, your life is quite fragmented as a comedian. Yeah. I mean, if you've got a kid as well.
Yeah, like, absolutely, you don't. Yeah. But there's often no excuse, and it's on me. And it's just actually, it's a lifetime of training to... I don't know. It's something I'm having to learn. I don't think it's... We don't teach our kids it when they're... Or we stop at some point,
no, because,
don't we?
Again, I'm so pleased that I've managed to sling some sort of food down the throat space.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's done. Tea time is done. What's next? Bath
and you have such a fucked up logic, don't you? I got like a... my kid will eat anything, but he's just started to be really, you know, a bit trickier and... just trickier about what he'll eat, and
he's
just
like
wants shit all the time. He's really nearly four. So he's very willful, but you know, I was just going to tell a terrible parenting story that the other day I managed to get like a floret of broccoli and two bits of carrot, like literally pick them up with my finger into this huge child and just sort of go, could quickly now, and then he'll let me throw it in. But only because
like
then he knows he's like,
it's
going to be in like a massive pudding.
I know.
And you're like, well, the bulk of your meal has still been that, but I know that in that tummy is a green thing and an orange thing, and so my work is done.
You know, you can talk a lot about, and some parents will wang on about giving kids, you know, making broccoli into something, a treat rather than a... But you can't, you're so embattled. You just, as you say, you're just proud of yourself that you've gotten to eat anything.
Yes,
right?
So true. 5 second rule, yes or no?
Or is it if it's been on the floor?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not squeamish about that. I'll let it go further than 5 seconds sometimes.
Perfect.
Again, even if I did used to worry about that, having two kids, it removes your sentimentality about food.
So true.
Just like, I'll eat this, you'll eat that.
Yeah.
I've
bragged so much, though, Mark, on this podcast about the shit that I let my kid eat off the floor, and then one time, not that long ago, he got worms.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And it was where I'd let him... Well, I'd not let him, I just failed to stop him climbing upon an outdoor table and licking some ketchup that had half dried off the wooden outdoor table that was I could see was next to a bird shit.
You get into this thing of like, well, we got away with it last time, didn't we?
Yeah.
Like, you hear about worms, but he's not going to actually.
He's got them. He actually got them, and his nursery phoned me to say he's got them. So it was done in a, it
it's,
was,
it's
it
a
was
shaming
discovered
moment.
In a shameful way. What's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten?
Well, yeah. I suppose one of the answers is
that
all the stuff on the island.
And the snake. That has got to be it.
But also, the other. I suppose I've. I once did. All of it has been being put through stuff for TV. I once did a TV show where we went around. Yeah, because, you know, like, if you're like us, sort of fairly game and grateful to be on the telly a bit, you're like, alright, fine, what do you want me to do now?
Yeah.
Within reason. I did this travelogue around South America, which is an amazing gig to get for Henning, with Henning rather, Henning Vane,
awesome.
Which is football related. It was in the run up to the World Cup in Brazil, so it was an amazing show. But one day in Brazil, they made us eat all this various types of offal and stuff, and it was like, it was a blind tasting. It was like, now, today you're going to try a Brazilian delicacy. It was all different types of the linings of stomachs of various things and stuff like that. It's probably no more grim than eating, you know, a sausage or the pie I've just had.
Yeah.
But it was difficult, and because of the way TV is, because we were filming, it had to be done by a particular time. I seem to remember it was like 11:30 in the morning or something. I just had breakfast,
and this
has been
sense.
Sprung on me. I've eaten most of the terrible foods I've had have been because they're trying to impress the viewing public, basically, or going along. I'm not very. I won't narrow. rarely order adventurously in the restaurant because of this fear that everyone else's meal will come out and you'll be like, oh.
Why didn't I just play it safe?
That friend of mine that I mentioned who went to the Fat Duck with, Corrie, he's got this extraordinary thing where she deliberately orders things that she doesn't think that she likes in order to retrain her palate.
Wow.
And so with the exception of, she's never got into prawns, but almost any other food she will enjoy because
she'll make herself enjoy.
Like disciplined, which is
yeah, but also that does happen.
Thing,
I've very rarely had stuff that I don't like, but like this, for years I didn't like parsnips, and then something just changed, like in my 20s, and then
you realise after a bit,
didn't like beetroot, and everyone go, oh, you just haven't had it nice enough, or you haven't had it like this, or whatever. And you'd be like, I fucking made myself try it again and again, and I do like it now. It does work.
It's funny what you can be wrong about, isn't it? I held out against olives for a long time.
Oh, really?
I also didn't think that I liked tartar sauce. I've never have it with fish, and then no idea why. I think it's because I'm not much of a cheese person. I had this idea that it was really cheesy.
Don't like cheese. I don't, no, it's mayonnaise and gherkins.
Yeah,
and
it turns out it's lovely.
Stuff,
it? Yeah. I was about 33 and I thought, Christ, I've wasted a lot of time.
I've had 33 years without tartar sauce.
A lot of my 30s has been having to be humble about foods that I had dismissed.
Right.
And then,
yeah, so true. What, and tell me about dislike of cheese. Is it a blanket thing or is it a cheddar you don't like?
It's almost a blanket thing. But yeah, the main thing is strong tasting plain cheeses like cheddar or... Or actually,
is it textural? Is it? Because I can understand how they might
really
feel a bit burny in the mouth. Actually,
it's hard to know. I didn't like cheese sandwiches as a kid when it was probably like horrible cheddars and baby bells and that sort of thing. And my mum, understandably, tried really hard to change my mind in that parental spirit of you must have a bit of everything.
Yeah.
So I developed an aversion to the whole idea of cheese because I associated it with these arguments.
Oh,
of like,
no!
In fact, she was one for like. Gentle bribery as well.
Yeah.
Like, you can have some jelly, but you have some fruit pastels if you just eat this cheese. So I associated eating cheese with a thing that you did under duress in order to win prizes.
God.
So I think a lot of it is psychological. If there's also I have a slightly heaving reaction to like my worst ones are soft cheeses, brie or camembert. When someone's baking a camembert, the smell of that. I can't be doing it.
It's just biological, isn't it? There's nothing stuff like that when it's like the smell of it, the sight of it, the everything of it.
When people bring
revulsion.
A cheese board out in a restaurant,
really?
And it's like, you know that you've had a lovely meal and then instead of dessert, people are like, I tell you what, we'll just get a cheese board.
I love that though.
Well,
Mark.
What's painful is I can really see how nice it is as well.
Right,
especially
right,
as
right.
a wine drinker. Everyone's like, we'll have another bit of wine.
You can watch people enjoy it. You can see how people enjoy it. I lose my shit about over
ultimately,
a fancy cheese board.
I can really believe it, yeah, because it's not. There's really no middle ground. People,
but it's unsociable.
More or less
if the smell is really...
That's the thing.
So
see, cheese board come out and people are like, oh, my God. Yeah, that's the thing. I can't even be... Or the smell of Parmesan, even. There's something... But then, again, as you get older, I used to think I couldn't stand mozzarella, but... I've always been fine with it on stuff like pizza and things because you don't really taste it.
Mozzarella doesn't taste anything.
But then these days,
sometimes
even with chunks of mozzarella, you start to realise, it's fine, feta's fine.
Yeah.
So I imagine I might mellow towards all of it. I feel like getting older is a gradual process of revising most of your opinions on everything,
actually. Every opinion you ever had, it's so true.
Yeah, like a lot of food related, but also...
Or do you think just realising you're less sure? That's what I'm finding.
I think that's probably true.
Everything I was pretty finite on, there probably is an understandable reactionary opinion.
And I think that is a sign of greater intelligence or like greater emotional maturity. I'm suspicious of people that have got very binary views on...
Or that get
are
more
or
narrow as they get older,
yeah. because how do you... Surely if you've...
Not yet.
If you live long enough, all you learn is that you don't really know anything.
And
there aren't many opinions I hold which I wouldn't be prepared to revise if I met someone that I thought knew better than me what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's so true.
And food is one of those, but it's a good rule for life as well.
It's a great, lovely
Don't commit
rule
to your
life.
Opinion so much that you can't hear.
Yeah.
Because even at 40, I'm 40 next year, I'm still constantly meeting people that make me reassess things. And
Same.
Think, you know, and if you don't have that, then... Well, then you become one of those people that are in their 70s who think they know everything and
you're
just
fucked.
Unhappy, you know.
I can see why people do that because there's a safety in having decided, it's quite threatening to suddenly have to think,
hang on, what if I was wrong about loads of stuff? But it can also be quite liberating.
Oh, well, shall we talk again in a decade and see if you like cheese?
Would be a good, like, real slow burn podcast, actually.
You'd like cheese, but also be very far right wing, Mark. It'd be really terrible. I'd have been like, oh, I wish it hadn't. I'd have sacrificed for cheese.
Yeah, I was wrong about cheese, but I was also wrong about liberalism.
Say scrumdiddlyumptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
A mad world leader trips over on a televised trip to a local park where the whole point is that they were meant to be making it look like they loved parks and they were right at home there. Instead, this one's fallen over, probably on a molehill or a divot.
Yeah.
Very overridden, this. They decide to criminalise all grass and grass-covered areas, and work begins immediately demolishing all fields and green areas.
This guy's out of control.
This is especially terrible news for Wales. In great news, he's agreed not to go through with this demolition of all things green, but only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, do 200 prisoner get-ups. Do you know what they are?
No, I don't think
it's so. It's where you sit cross-legged, and then you lie back on the floor, and then you do a sit-up, and you have to lift yourself right up into a standing position.
Yeah, right, one of those. 200.
Which, if you watch it on YouTube, looks quite easy, but I had a go at it the other day, and I can only do three, and I can only do them if you then, once you've stood up, you're allowed to sort of fall over forwards a bit. So they're very hard, is my point.
So 200 of those in exchange for not...
And it says you're sort of saving the planet, really, It sounds impossible, but you do it! But you're obviously... And nothing bad happens to the planet. You go down in history as the man who saved the planet.
I feel great,
And also, you're pretty kind of physically exerted.
Oh, I imagine
So in that kind of, like, post-exertion but post-shower happy afterglow high of hunger... Your main prize in the moment is the feast of your dreams. It's basically a happy version of your last meal.
Yeah, right.
Nothing has to be possible. Nothing has to be healthy, ethical, anything like that. And it's not going to have any impact on your body or how you feel. This is just about...
You're right. It's like a death row meal, but a celebratory
exactly.
one.
Exactly. So I'd want to know what you're eating, what you're drinking, and if there's a who, with, and where, then who, with, and where.
You're right. It's a massive setup for,
Yes. But I can see longer every podcast.
I get it though, because you can't just ask what would your last meal be, because I have been asked that before, and if I'm too literal minded, I immediately start thinking about the circumstances of my death. Yeah. I'm tempted by like an enormous lasagna or something because you'd want to replenish the carbs sort of thing.
Yeah.
But as I've mentioned, sausage and mash is my greatest pleasure food wise, I think. So I think we're looking at I want mustard mash, ideally. So,
lovely. Like, what sort of mustard? Like a Dijon or like
sort of
a seedy one?
Seedy mustards in a mash.
Oh, yes.
Proper, like fancy sausages like you get, like pork and apple. Not too fancy, just nice.
But from a butcher's, maybe.
From a butcher's, And then beans rather than peas, I think. Ooh. Baked beans, sausage mash and beans.
What, just standard Heinz? Or have you got a fancy
Heinz is fine. Yeah, actually Heinz is fine. In fact, if anything, it shouldn't be fancy because I think my mum's cooked this as well, because then it has this extra comfort.
That's lovely.
And she'll be full. I mean, so I'll have it back in Bristol with my mum and my girlfriend, I think.
Lovely.
Although she wouldn't really like, but I guess my mum could do something else for her.
Yeah, she can have what she likes.
Cool. And then I'm not normally a desserts person, but I would probably try and get my money's worth out of this, because so there's an apple and blackberry crumble, I think.
Ooh,
I'd have, because again, my mum makes it. Nice one of those. And if my mum will make all this, then that saves on the budget for it. I know that there's money no object, but like...
We don't have a budget. This is the budget. Is it infinity?
Don't like to be in any trouble. Oh. So basically, just the ultimate comfort food.
But what do you have with the crumble? Maybe a custard or an ice cream or something?
Ice cream, vanilla ice cream to sort of, and it melts and it sort of droops all over the crumble. Very nice. And my mum is also... one of these really doting mums, so she'd be talking the whole time about how impressive it was that I saved the world.
Yeah.
She'd be showing me newspapers. Presumably there'd be quite a lot of coverage. She would have archived all of that kind of sort of thing
she does.
So it'd be good for the ego as well as for the body, I think, this
Superb.
Meal.
Superb.
Really
oh,
looking
God.
Forward to this now, actually.
I am.
The prisoner get-up is going to be tough, but I think it's like...
Get training.
Oh, cool.
Thank you so much for doing this.
It's been really fun. Yeah, also the sun's even come out since we've been here. So it's
feels
gorgeous.
Like it's fated.
Delicious.
Follow Mark on social media. He's called @WatsonComedian on Twitter, and very funny is there too. He's got some brilliant new material nights coming up that he's sharing with the also very, very funny Sophie Hagen. They're going to be on Tuesday nights at the Tap Room on Upper Street in Islington throughout the autumn and winter, I think. And they're only a fiver. They're bound to be so good. So look them up and go and watch.
Come and see Hoovering Live in Manchester in a few days. That's the 13th of October. It's in the afternoon. And come and watch my stand-up too, if you like. I'm doing my show Hench at the Soho Theatre in January, through all of January. It's on there in October as well, but it's all sold out then. And then I'm taking it on tour from February. And that's very exciting. I'm going all over the place, all over the world even. But the first sort of, I think, 20-ish dates are all on sale on my website. I would love you to come and see that show. It got nominated for Best Show at the Edinburgh Festival, and I'm very proud of it. It's all about strength. I think you'll like it. I think you're into this podcast, you'll like it. Go to my website, jessicafosterq.com. I list all the Hoovering Lives, all of my tour shows and all my other gigs as well there too. Follow the podcast on social media, at The Hoovering Pod. Follow me too. Why not? At Jessica Foster Q. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.